Good morning. I think Mike says Lord Beth was picking on him, and then he asked an 84-year-old man who struggles to come up here to give the prayer. Good job there. It was Mr. Perryman's birthday yesterday, so wish him a happy birthday if you see him, if you talk to him. And I thought with Chuck here, I might roam around the stage a little bit today. That just seems to be his thing. Now I'm going to talk about something that everyone always agrees on. There's never an issue with it, and that is called politics. I've found at school, I've done the experiment a few times. All I have to do is say, well, if you think Joe Biden is a good president, stand on this side of the room. If you think Donald Trump was a good president, stand on this side of the room. And it takes that long to have this little argument of these kids arguing. But I do it for a reason, and that's because of what our first president said about politics. And so I wanted to look at our government today. We have a democracy, or representative republic, if you will, and we think that it's a good one. It's a good government. What did Winston Churchill say? Democracy is the worst type of government except for every other government. And there's one problem with all governments, and if you could, I wish you'd fill in the blanks here. Socialism is a great government, except for blank. A monarchy is a great government, except for blank. Democracy is a great government, except for blank. What's that blank? It's us. It's people. Every single government would work without us. And that's the problem. That's the problem with all governments in the world. Today I want to look at something George Washington did as he was leaving office. He gave a farewell address. He wrote it down. He didn't get up and speak. And he gave the United States three warnings. These are the people that created our government, supposed to be the best and brightest at the time. And yet we'll see. If we take all of the morals, we take everything out of our government that contradicts our religion, and just look at how people run this stuff that they're supposed to be experts at. And we'll see, again, take everything out, take all of our beliefs out, and still look at how our government's run. And you realize it can be a monarchy, it can be socialist beliefs, it can be a democracy. It won't work. It doesn't matter what it is. There's one answer. We'll get to it towards the end. So in September of 1796, George Washington decided to hang it up. There was no reason he could not continue to be president. There's nothing in the Constitution at that time that would prevent him from being president again. He had served 8 years. He only wanted to serve four. In fact, he didn't want to serve at all. He's probably the only president we've ever had that didn't want it at all. And they basically forced him into it. He had retired. He was living, well, not simple life. He's one of the wealthiest men in the country, but he was living a really good life, retired in Virginia. And he realizes that if he doesn't serve, there's going to be so much infighting that the country would fall apart. So he agreed to serve. He wanted to leave after his first term, but two of his cabinet members, Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton, were fighting every day, threatening each other, even go behind the Philadelphia Hall in different places to fight. And so he realized, if I don't continue, this country's going to fall apart quickly. So he served his 8 years, and he decided not to serve again. The men didn't even know he was going to walk away until he decided to send this letter out. And he wanted to send this out to let people know, okay, these are the problems we're going to face. And I think he could see the future in this instance. Again, these are the issues that our people, our government, supposed to be able to handle. And he gives us some warnings here. Now, this is a guy who, during his presidency, There was a rebellion up in Pennsylvania. He gets on his horse as he sees himself as commander-in-chief. He leads an army in to put down this rebellion. This is a different type of guy than we have today. Can you imagine one of our leaders, doesn't matter who it is, in the last 20 years going and doing that? But he led them out there. He actually had to hang a few people to make an example. This is a different guy than we see today. But as he leaves, he wanted to give us some warnings. And I'll give you the first one here. He warned this country about being involved in any way with foreign allies. And he stated that if we get involved with allies, we create allies, we're going to have to back them when they ask us to. He said, stay away from it. And when you look at every single war, with the exception of the Civil War, every single war we've been involved in involved us creating allies. Now you can say World War I was different. No, World War I was not. We were supplying one side, not the other, and we became involved. World War II, old Japan bombed us. Well, yeah, we were supplying their allies. Again, involved every time. Korea, Vietnam, what were we doing? We were involved in trying to stop communism, so we created allies for our side. Almost every single war has involved us creating allies and being on that side. What's the Bible say about this? What does the Bible say about this type of behavior? Let's turn to Matthew 26. Matthew 26. Look at two sets of scriptures here for this first warning. Matthew 26, verse 52. And this is where Peter, they were about to arrest Christ. And Peter pulled his sword out. And in my opinion, with the chaos there, there's a good chance Peter was trying to kill this guy, because he cuts a guy's ear off. And in that chaos, that's pretty serious. But what does Christ say to him? Makes it pretty obvious when you get involved in this. He said, put your sword in its place, for all who take the sword will perish by the sword. Everyone who decides to go this way is going to face it. Now, that can be a country. We've lost a lot of people to war throughout time. And we don't like to think of it, but we're a pretty warlike people. And it involves these allies that we create. If we stayed home, mind our own business, there may be issues, but we certainly have seen issues when we didn't. Let's look at the next one, and I want you to think about this. When we see all these people in Congress fighting and yelling, and boy, they get their 5 minutes of fame because they're giving these big speeches, and it's always ripping the other side to shreds. But I want you to imagine someone giving this speech in Congress. Let's go to Matthew 5. We talk about creating allies, and if you create an ally, you automatically create an enemy as well. Matthew 5, imagine this. Someone standing up in Congress and giving these, eight scriptures, 38 through 45. Matthew 5, 38 through 45. It says, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you not to resist an evil person. Whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, give him your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. Since you've heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. When you look at it from that point, every single person is one of God's sons and daughters. Can you imagine this in Congress today? What the media would do to someone who actually stood up and gave something like this? Coming straight out of Sermon on the Mount, Christ's words. How much would people try to destroy this person? And you could put that person, there are no parties here. You put a Republican, Democrat, it doesn't matter. Whatever side said it, the other side's going to be dead set against it on something like this. But these are Christ's words about war, about how you should set a government up. These aren't man's words. Again, George Washington said, stay away from allies. And in that sense, you could see that there is some scriptural basis to it, each of these. We've not done so well with that, and we continue to build allies. Second thing that George Washington warned America about, which almost is embarrassing to this point, is George Washington said, this country should not get into debt. This country should not get into debt. This morning, I did a stop on my watch on the national debt clock. At 6:46 this morning, our national debt was $28,960,902,142,760. 6:46 this morning. Almost $29 trillion. When this new budget goes in, it's going to bump up to over $30 trillion in debt. This seems like a problem, especially when the CIA can track down. It's very hard to track down how many dollars there are because you have dollars being lost, you have dollars being burned. The CIA estimates that there are $19 trillion in the world. How's that work? How is that possible? Now, it seems impossible, except there's all this what's called soft money that they use that bumps it up to about $80 trillion in the world. And it's money that countries use. It's just completely crooked. They use it to bump their own credit ratings up for these world banks and things like that. Doesn't really exist. We're almost $30 trillion in debt, and there's $80 trillion in the world, even with all this money. That can't happen. But hey, you don't have to worry about it. Because each one of us, as a taxpayer, we only owe $230,000 each, all right? We're in good shape. Because each one of us, our portion of that is $230,000. So we're in real good shape. This is a type of debt load that's only been seen a few times with the percentages in history. One was Germany after World War II. A couple of times with some of the Chinese empires with what they had. And once with the Roman Empire. There's only one answer to reset something like this in history that's ever happened. And it's a world war. It's got to happen for us to reset all of this. Then everything's reset afterwards. They restructure. And that's the only thing that's happened so far to be able to get out of a debt like this. It's where we are. How'd we get there? These are the experts. These are the people that this country elects to send up there. And yet they have one job once they get up there. Does anyone know what it is? Because they spend 65-70%, I don't know. I had a political science minor in school. 65-70% of their time is doing this. Does anyone know what that is? Raising money to get reelected. That's what the majority of their time is spent. Now, how do you get reelected? You promise a road project out here. You promise a building over here to your local constituents. If you're in a military area, you get billion-dollar contracts for your area, and people will vote for you. You add that up over time, 535 representatives from Senate and Congress. That's a lot of money that they spend, not to mention everything we give to people around the world. We don't have a dime, but we're giving it to people. But it's also where we are ourselves personally, right? Because I think about debt. And debt's not a sin in the Bible. Debt is mentioned in the Bible several times. It's not said it's wrong, but it cautions you about it. Think about anyone that you know, and they're almost all gone now, that were old enough to remember the Great Depression. And think about how they lived. I remember when I was in school, and I was in school older, so we were sent out to Rockville and Eagleville area to interview some of the older people out there. Some of you remember Clarence Puckett, Mr. Puckett, that went to church with us for years, and I actually got to go out and be a part of that interview. It was the first one I went to. And we had several questions to ask him, and every one of them lived a very, very simple life because of what they had been through. They'd be stunned at how some of us live today, how far we're in debt, which some people aren't, and that's great. But the cars that we have, all of this stuff, they would be stunned by what we have today because they had to live through something that we haven't. And we may have to learn the hard way. It certainly looks like it with the way this country's debt level is going. But what does the Bible say about debt? Again, it doesn't state that it's a sin, but it gives some warnings about it. Let's turn to Psalm 37. Psalm 37, verse 21. If you're going to borrow, you pay back. Very simple. Psalm 37, verse 21. Says, the wicked borrows and does not repay, but the righteous shows mercy and gives. You do repay your debts. And to repay your debts, you cannot get in as deep as some people do sometimes. Have to watch that debt load. I dare say anyone that went through the Great Depression, they didn't do that. They were very, very cautious about ever borrowing money from people because they learned the hard way. Let's look at another verse on this. Proverbs 22. Proverbs 22, verse 7. And we've all heard this. It says, the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. Again, if we're in debt ourselves, that's on us. We could very easily live in a little house. There was a man who used to go to church with us, and he would come in this very building 30 years ago. He had an old car that would barely run. He would have dried fruit in the back window of it. He lived in an old trailer with no electricity. He lived rough. But you know what? He had no worries. He didn't worry about things that we do. He lived a simple life that I think God probably intended a little more than where we are sometimes. They lived a different way than we do. We have to watch that ourselves, this debt level. Yeah, our country, we've got to mess with that. But our own personal ways. Go back and look at how people lived in the 1930s. And then those people, how they lived later in their lives. They lived a little different than we do. And I think we may have to learn the hard way, just like our country is going to. Washington had one more warning for the American people. When he ran as president, he ran as, I guess you would say, an independent because there were no political parties. His third warning was there should be no political parties in this country. Don't have them because he believed, believe it or not, this is hard to imagine, but he believed that political parties would divide the country. So he warned, he said, stay away from political parties. Immediately after this letter came out, of course, two parties started with John Adams and Thomas Jefferson running. It took 8 years after this speech. The guy that they all looked up to as kind of a hero, before the Vice President of the United States decides to have a duel with the former Secretary of the Treasury of the United States, and Vice President kills the Secretary of Treasury from the United States. 8 years after he said, stay away from this, and they're fighting because of this stuff, because of political parties. Again, you want to get a fight going, start a political argument of something. Throw out something and see what's going to happen. Even in church, where it doesn't belong, we're not supposed to be here at all. We're in this world. We're not of this world, right? And yet we see it sometimes. We see it in church where it has no business whatsoever. No business at all. And yet we've allowed political parties to infiltrate everything in this country. Again, divide this country. This COVID, has it not been politicized beyond belief, one way or the other? Is there something to it? There's 100% something to it. We don't lose 250,000 more people this year than we have any other time, and there's not. And yet there are people, oh, it's not there, or whatever it is. We politicize something that is a serious problem in this country. Again, it doesn't matter what side you're on. I lean more left or right. No, that's not what we're supposed to be. We're supposed to look at it from almost from an outside perspective. Just look at what it's supposed to be like. Because our government is almost the total opposite of what God's government's going to be. Which just seems strange, because we seem to think, yeah, we've got a pretty good government. And we do, simply because in our country, the corruption spread out to 535 different people and not just one. That's sad, but it's true. So we do have a few more rights than people where there is one leader and that's it. It's sad, but it's true. But let's look at where we should be. Go to John 17. Think about when Christ said this. He's about to face a severe trial. John 17, we're going to read verses 14 through 16. This is where we're supposed to be, not involved in politics at all. Verse 14 says, I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. We're in this world, like it or not. All we can do is pray that God's going to be with us, and he will. And verse 16 says, they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. That's the way we've got to look at it. Now, again, we may like the country we live in. I think we have freedoms here and opportunity that very few countries or people in any other countries get to see. But when you think about it, God's government's going to look nothing like our government. It's going to be whatever you want to say. You could say a monarchy because he calls it a kingdom. You could say it's a dictatorship, whatever you like. That's what it's going to be. It's not going to be a whole bunch of men saying, well, no, I disagree. I think it should be this or that. Christ is going to rule, and he's going to rule, again, as a dictator, as a king. But he's going to have perfect justice. It's going to be based on his laws, and every one of these laws are right here in this Bible. Not going to have these political parties. Not going to have getting involved with nation against nation. Certainly not going to have debt, because I doubt that our currency system is what's going to be there at the end time. It's going to be totally different than what we have. And when we look at it from now, it's going to seem strange, because we look at other countries that say that's wrong. But no, plug in that beginning again. Socialism would be perfect, except for you and me. Everybody does the work the same. Everyone works for the good of everyone. That's great. A dictatorship works great if that person, you could say, is Christ. That's going to work. Any government works as long as we're not involved. And that's why Christ has to be there. Let's look at Daniel 2. Look at the way that it's going to be. And there's no choice. There's no one saying, I think this government should be here. I think this government should be here. No, it's going to be one way. Daniel 2 and verse 44. Daniel 2, verse 44, it says, "And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed." It's going to take everything else over. "And the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these other kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." God's law is going to liberate us from all of this. It's going to free us from all of these habits that we have, all habits that all people have. Again, the law is going to be everything that we know now. We know what the laws are going to be. And the only requirement, again, no Satan. How wonderful will that be? No one leaning that little feeling inside you, or this little devil, as they used to show on TV, on your shoulder saying, "Do this, do that." It's not going to be there. All we have to do is obey. We obey it, and we get all those blessings that are given to us for the obeying. You keep God's commandments, you receive the blessings. No Satan, no infighting among politicians, because there's one ruler. And you know that ruler will never make a mistake. Again, our government's good for people because it spreads out the corruption. But in Satan, in God's world, when Christ rules, it's not even close to what the government's going to be. Let's look at one final piece of scripture. Tim, I'm going to give you plenty of time. Isaiah 2. Maybe, I don't know, you grin, so maybe it's going to be a while. Isaiah 2, verses 2 through 4. All of this stuff that we ever get worked up about in the world, all these worries about politics, this debt's a problem, yes, but it has to come. And it's probably better if it hurries up, because we want the kingdom, we need the kingdom here. But Isaiah 2, verses 2 through 4, this is where we're going to be. "Now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it. Many people shall come and say, 'Come and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, and we will walk in his paths.'" This is finally a government set for all of the world, for everyone to follow. And there will be none of these issues that we see today. "For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between the nations and rebuke many people. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks." All of this money, so much of this money of our debt goes into the military complex. How much money is spent with that? We have foreign allies. Yeah, we go to war. That costs a lot of money. There's the debt. And then we get into the political aspects of them fighting among themselves. A lot of waste here. But at this point, that's all gone. And it said, "Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore." We may like our country that we live in. We may be happy that we live here. And I think we're blessed in a lot of ways that we do live here. But we also have a lot of problems if we look at this country and say, hey, we've got it figured out. Because we don't even remotely resemble what God's kingdom's going to be. So just keep in mind that we get involved with governments, but at the end, there's only going to be one true government.